Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. At over 74 inches so far, Fairbanks snowfall is well above normal, with nearly 2 feet coming down in February alone.
Snow, snow, and more snow.
That's City Mayor Jim Matherly at a Monday night city council meeting. Matherly says he's been getting a lot of complaints about snow on city streets. He said he understands public frustration, but asked for patience, noting the city is doing what it can under a tight budget.
Public Works is working on a shoestring in some cases. I just authorized some more temp workers to come in, work overnight if we have to tackle the streets.
I'm getting very concerned about the snow.
Councilmember Jerry Cleworth urged the administration to meet with Public Works to talk about how to deal with all the snow.
Because I think we're going to come up against a crisis situation.
It's definitely hard to keep up when we have these heavy back-to-back continuous storms.
State Department of Transportation spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says crews are also struggling to keep Fairbanks state-maintained highways and roads clear.
Driving around Fairbanks, you'll notice that where we don't quite have all of our turn lanes cleaned out yet, those kind of things.
Fairbanks has had clear skies since the last storm ended yesterday morning, but the forecast calls for a chance of more snow beginning this weekend. Here's National Weather Service meteorologist Lindsay Tartafuber.
Currently, we're under a ridge of high pressure, which has allowed us a break in the activity, but the westerly flow will redevelop this weekend, and then after that, it's just going to be system after system every day to a day and a half, similar to what we saw earlier this week.
While snow has been plentiful in the Fairbanks area, that's not been the case to the southeast on the north side of the Alaska Range.
We're looking longingly up at Fairbanks because you all are taking all the snow.
Mike Hopper runs the Black Rapids Lodge along the Richardson Highway. Hopper, an experienced backcountry skier, says it's the fourth year in a row that the north side of the range has been snow-starved.
We've had virtually no snow to speak of. It's still really brown down in the mountains.
Hopper laments the drought, but knows the other side of snow all too well. In December 2014, Hopper lost a friend and a dog to an avalanche while backcountry skiing in the Alaska Range. Hopper cautions people to be mindful of snow dangers, even in Fairbanks.
When you get big loads on steep rooftops, you'll need to be aware of that. There's that kind of possibility. And there are things called terrain traps down in some little gully where everything's kind of piled up and a nice steep wall next to it. You can kick free definitely enough snow to bury you.
Hopper says any slope 30 degrees or steeper is a threat to slide. Avalanches in the Summit Lake area pushed debris across the Richardson Highway twice this week. The slides Monday and Wednesday were on the south side of the range at mileposts 195 and 210, respectively, where snow has been more plentiful this winter. A proposed state house bill would allow Alaska judges to issue protective orders removing guns from people who they find to likely be a threat to themselves or others. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that House Bill 75 received backing from the public during a Judiciary Committee meeting yesterday. 29 of the first 30 people who testified on the bill said they support it as a way of preventing suicides and homicides. Juno Douglas High School sophomore Stella Tolman says she was inspired by the activism of survivors of the Florida school shooting to testify in favor of the bill.
As an American, I should not feel scared to come to school, but I am scared. I'm scared that someone will come into my school and kill me or my two younger sisters or my friends with a weapon that they should not possess. So I urge you to vote yes on House Bill 75 because we need stricter gun laws.
Bill sponsor, Anchorage Democratic Representative Garen Tarr, says she tried to help her own brother before he killed himself. She says other deaths using guns are often preceded by warning signs.
When we read about some of these stories, we know that family members have in fact been looking for something to do and wanting something, a tool to use. And I think this can be an important prevention tool.
Two groups of people could file petitions for the gun violence protective orders, immediate family members and police and other peace officers. The person with the guns would be given at least 10 days notice of the hearing to decide on the order. If the judge finds clear and convincing evidence that the person is a danger, the judge would issue a protective order prohibiting the person from possessing, owning, buying, or receiving a firearm or ammunition for up to 6 months. Family members or police officers could also seek emergency orders that don't include the person with the guns in a hearing. If the judge finds that there is a greater than 50% chance that the person could harm themselves or others, then the judge could issue an immediate emergency protective order that could last up to 20 days. Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, a Republican who caucuses with the mostly Democratic House majority, questioned whether the bill would take away the gun rights of anyone with a diagnosis of clinical depression.
I think it would be kind of an incentive not to seek psychiatric help for depression.
Tarr noted that mental health providers are not among those who could ask for the gun violence protective orders. The committee did not vote on the bill. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race kicks off Saturday with a ceremonial start in Anchorage and then the official restart in Willow Sunday. As Alaska Public Media Zachariah Hughes reports, this year's event is mired in scandals that are putting the race's future in jeopardy.
This year's race is up against extra challenges as multiple controversies have crashed down all at once, even driving one of its stars to post a 17-minute-long YouTube video lashing out at race leadership.
The Iditarod can try to run me over. They can try to throw me under the bus. But I'm going to be honest to myself, and they're going to find out I don't fit under the bus.
Dallas Seavey is a mushing wunderkind, having won the race four times before age 30. But since last fall, he's been embroiled in the sport's first high-profile doping scandal after it came out that some of his dogs tested positive for a banned painkiller at the end of last year's race. Seavey vigorously denies that he drugged his team and was backed up by other notable mushers. He's faulted the Iditarod's board of directors for mishandling the investigation, hurting his reputation in the process.
There is part of this race that is a cancer right now. There is a corruption in this race.
Seavey snubbed this year's Iditarod and is competing in a Norwegian race that runs at the same time. He's also pushed back on the damning doping narrative.
I believe this was given to my dogs maliciously, as that's one of the options. I think that's the most likely option.
The theory that a saboteur drugged Seavey's dogs is accepted by many in Alaska's mushing community. Some believe it could have been an accident or mistake. Some think it might have been a competitor. And others point to animal rights activists who have done more in recent years to take down the Iditarod's public image. Leading that charge is PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. The group says it did not have any personnel in Alaska last year and condemns dogs being given banned substances. But Colleen O'Brien, a vice president for communications, says PETA is leaning harder than ever on corporate sponsors to drop their support for the event.
One of the biggest lies that the Iditarod community has tried to sell the public is that these dogs aren't like the dogs we share our homes with, and it's not true.
PETA wants for the Iditarod to become a race without dogs, saying mushing is fundamentally abusive. The group claims that sponsor flight is taking a toll on the Iditarod's financial health, and for the first time ever, they're sending protesters to Alaska for this year's race. On top of all of that, earlier in February, a prominent group of race veterans within the Iditarod Official Finishers Club called for the president of the board of directors to resign immediately, alleging his mismanagement and conflicts of interest are jeopardizing the whole sport. The demand came on the heels of a confidential report by the Foraker Group that was commissioned by the race's main sponsors and leaked to the press. It pointed to many of the same problems, saying the board needs major reforms for companies to keep financing it. Many are pining for the old days, when the Iditarod was more like a weeks-long wilderness adventure than a race. Stan Hooley, Iditarod's CEO, sympathizes.
There's a big part of me that feels that way, too. Unfortunately, I'm in the business and in the role of working to grow this race.
In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And I'm Dan Bross.